This is Thank You Heartbreak.
Hi, everyone. I'm Chelsea Lee Trescott.
As a breakup coach, relationship advice columnist, and the founder of Break Upward, Chelsea is passionate about human beings and their stories. She talks to people about their journeys in love, growth, heartbreak, revelations, and every wound and lesson along the way.
This podcast shines a light on heartbreak, showing you that the most crushing experiences are also your greatest opportunity to become meaningful, relatable human beings. Now, let's get to the heart of it. Hi, everyone. This is Chelsea Lee Trescott, breakup coach and podcast host of Thank You Heartbreak. And this is episode 237 with Frida Hoffman, the author of a book that came out this month. It's already out. It's called Carry Me, Stories of Pregnancy Loss. If you don't have the attention span right now for an intro, I encourage you to jump ahead to the 10-minute mark and just get straight into the conversation. You won't hurt my feelings, but if you stay for the intro, how lovely that would be too. I'm going to read to you from the back of the book, just so you know what we're getting into, and then I'll speak to you guys just a little bit more. Finding little literature or support available after suffering two miscarriages, Frida Hoffman decided to create the resource she wished she'd had, Real Stories About Pregnancy Loss from Real Women, free of the off-putting lenses of religion or academia, in the hopes that it will provide other women comfort and wisdom when they need it most. Now, I'm not someone that has tried to get pregnant, so if you're like me, don't think that you won't relate to this episode, because I found myself listening to it back and feeling this rush of sensitivity toward the subject, toward the possibility of being a mom, the rush of that for me, really the excitement, but also, of course, the despair that could come out of not being able to have a child, the despair of thinking that your life is going to take you there eventually. I mean, for myself, I have always wanted this. We talk about this in the episode, and it's always been a little bit jarring to me to hear from friends and, you know, men that I'll meet that they're surprised to hear that. I mean, I'm someone that has dated men with children, so I've been able to even see myself in the role of a motherly role. But it's been hard at times to hear that people may just see me as a fun, free-spirited, maybe self-focused, not saying that anyone said that, but maybe they think that, which can be hard, person that wouldn't see the value in bringing a child into this world. And of course, to me, that is the ultimate gift, to see another individual come into themselves and to have a hand in that. When I was in Spain, I got this beautiful opportunity to hang with two girls, and one of them was kind of considered my mini-me, and it was really, really, really eye-opening and so special, and like this, just like this warm feeling of seeing a little girl that had these elements of myself and watching her behave and entertain and just be so precious. And see how she's coming into herself. She already is herself, but she will only develop more. And that was an example for me, an experience for me of, wow, I do want a child. Though I saw with the parents, my God, all that it takes to have children. So that was another question. But, you know, I had put this episode to the side while I was there and wasn't even thinking of these things. And then coming back and listening to it over, I was like, oh my gosh. Yeah, I just felt this again, a rush of what it could be to be maternal. And then also the episode speaks about and to something that I've been experiencing. So again, this feels very timely for me. I feel like it really is coming at the right time. And I hope that you will find that it's coming and you're listening to it at the right time for yourself to either instigate something, to be a catalyst, or just to support you and for it to resonate with you. But was the vulnerability of being in partnership and the desire for that. And I realized that while I was away that I have really repressed that desire for intimacy. Though, of course, my life feels very devoted to intimacy. I think that after breaking up with my last partner, which actually he was a father to two children, and it really crushed me losing all three of them. It took me a long time. It's taken me a long time to put myself out there just in a fun way with other men and experiencing that, but more deeply to let myself go deep and to remember what it takes to really have a partnership that feels fulfilling, which it did for me with my last relationship. It really, really did. And it was honesty. It took really honesty. And it felt natural at that time, to be honest. And I think something happened during these years where I forgot that the allure, I believe, that we bring into dating is really honesty. We're more alluring to others when we're not withholding. And it was beautiful to have this conversation with Frida and to listen to it back and to hear her experience and her desire too, after two miscarriages and two divorces, the self-blaming, the self-shaming about, look at the choices I've made, but then wanting partnership again and wanting more than that, a partnership that is honest and healing and freeing and doesn't require us to be perfect, to have healed everything, to want a partnership where in that partnership we are allowing each other to heal. And I think that the reason, one of the reasons why I don't have a child yet, why I'm not married yet, has been this feeling of I'm not there yet. And what does that even mean? And I think part of the I'm not there yet is I'm not healed enough for this yet. I need to be someone different. And that theory is sad. I'll just tell you, if you're there, if you are in the beginning stages of that, I would seek help so it doesn't get too long, if you don't endure that idea for too long, because it's a real way of depriving yourself of being seen and met where you are. And this is also a conversation of having partners that are able or are incapable, for whatever reason, of meeting us where we are when we are living in and under duress that we didn't expect, you know, when life doesn't go according to plan, which is what this podcast is really all about. Thank you, Heartbreak. Heartbreak is about disappointment of any kind. It's about transitions that were unexpected. And who are those people that help us turn the corner? And, you know, like the hands don't break apart as you're turning the corner. Wow. It is an absolute honor to have been able to speak to Frida. You know, I really thank her for even putting this on my radar again, because I haven't experienced pregnancy loss. It's not something that I just talk about, but it's something that I've been afraid of, that I wouldn't be able to have a child for some reason. And then, of course, enduring that, really wrapping your mind around losing life and then losing the dream, losing maybe the role or the figure that you thought that you would be, losing all the elements that could come with bringing life into this world, and having to reframe that for yourself. And then two, is that choosing, actually, the power of choosing and remembering that it's a choice if you want to be child-free, and how many of us are choosing and not assigning blame or shame or this feeling of being in a lesser than position that you haven't arrived just because you're not going to have a child. So there's so many things here, and it was a beautiful conversation. I don't want anyone to fear it. So I hope that you will listen and you will lean in and you will let any feelings that come up for you, just that you will meet yourself with those feelings and, you know, be proud of yourself for being someone who is feeling. As always, thank you for choosing to spend your time here and with us. And it would mean the world to me if you could rate and review this podcast, honestly, so other people can be alerted and know about it and be encouraged to listen and maybe come on as a guest themselves. Where do we even begin? Oh my God. You know what's so crazy is just it's sneaking up on me. The whole having a child sneaking up on me. Mm-hmm. And I've always, I don't know if you were ever this person, but I was someone that somehow no one seems to think I've wanted a child in my life. Like they look at me like, oh, you want that? Like they don't see me as that person. And yet it's always been, you know, something I've desired. Creating, seeing a child, a person come to life is something that I can't imagine not witnessing. And yet, you know, reading your book and just this sinking feeling that I've always had that like maybe it's going to be hard for me and not knowing. Ugh.
Yes. Oh, that's so beautiful how you put that. And I think so many women experience this, especially, you know, as we get into our 30s and many of us in our 40s now. I'm not sure how old you are.
34.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. Still got time. Yeah. But, you know, it's a journey for everybody, right? And every body is different. And so many twists and turns on this road we're on.
Maybe one of the more shocking things about the stories and the women is that, you know, not knowing that this could happen to you, not knowing that there could be trouble, not knowing even, you know, I forget who it was, but like the nausea, that's always been my biggest fear is like that feeling of, of being nauseous. And then having that side effect and not being able to escape it. Like you have to surrender your body to these conditions. Mm-hmm. Like, how does that feel? Like not being able to get out of something, having to like literally lean into this process that's traumatizing and frightening.
Right. And we're not talking about it. We're not talking about the complications that might come in pregnancy. We're not talking about the complications of getting pregnant, of trying to conceive. And I think, you know, we do such a disservice to one another by not talking about these issues, but also in public health, you know, in our education system, these aren't conversations people are having. And so how would we learn about these complications when, you know, we're seeing Hollywood movies where people fall in love and they want to make a baby. And then 9 months later, bam, there's a baby. Yeah. And the pregnancy was easy and dreamy and the woman's glowing and the family's happy. So, you know, these are stories that need to be told.
Right. Because then afterwards, it's like, so even if this does happen to you, I feel like there's this like push or pressure to put on a brave face. And again, not to bring the mood down or something, not to frighten other people, that you walk around in silence. And I was just, you know, there's so many directions to take this conversation. But one thing that really struck me was, and I hate to say this, but like the men that didn't seem like they could hang with the conversation.
Yeah.
Oh my God. And I've, you know, I even have a friend that I met with recently and she just had her second child and she's been struggling with, you know, a lot of anxiety. Her body hasn't been able to go back, isn't the same. So she has 50 pounds she hasn't been able to shed and just all these, you know, depression, things that she's never experienced. And even in that situation, she was talking to me about how isolated she feels from her husband.
Yeah, which is supposed to be our closest person, right? Who's on the journey with us. And yet. And you know, I feel for male partners too. I mean, especially because generally men are not supported in emotional crises and have even less of a vocabulary for dealing with loss and grief. And so they're, you know, certainly they're dealing with their own set of emotions and complications around loss, and then to have to also show up for the woman who's experiencing it physically, fully physically and emotionally and all of that. So I have a lot of empathy and also, damn, our partner can't even be there for us.
But I just can't imagine how, I don't know, I don't want to keep on using this word, but like kind of traumatizing that can be. Just so alone. Like, you know, they talk about how being lonely with someone, like feeling lonely in the midst of someone, that's different than just being alone. So I can't imagine that. And then already the shame that it seems like so many women feel, putting it on themselves that it's their fault. Did you find, you know, through these stories, like certain ways that women were able to bounce back and kind of come out of this with their husband? Was there ways that you found women were able to actually get closer to their partners?
I think so, for some women, and for many not as well. But I think having some sort of support system, so having a mother or a sister or girlfriends who they could talk to support them through it. Some women were saying just, you know, people dropping off meals if it would, yeah, felt like it was too heavy to interfere in the couple's grief, and just these small ways that we can show up and support one another. And I think that goes a long way towards our resiliency. And also it takes time, right? Everybody has a different curve and timeline for healing. And I don't even know if it's bouncing back. I'm sure there are women who bounce back, as you said. And I...
God, did I say that? Oh, no. I didn't even mean that. Oh, my God.
Well, and I think some women, after they've had recurrent miscarriages, and they're kind of used to it, not to say that the grief isn't as profound, you know, the third or the fourth time in, but it's learning, okay, well, I got to get back in there. I got to try again. You know, the window's dwindling. And how terrifying is that? So I think, you know, everybody has a different healing process. And one day we're doing great. And, oh, I think, you know, I think I'm starting to see the light, and, you know, these clouds are lifting. And then the next day it's like, we're right back in it, just in the darkness and feeling that sense of loneliness and isolation. And so, yeah, I think with a partner to be healing together and to feel ready again together, or not, if that's their decision, like, wow, it's like we all have to individually, you know, be whole again and in process with our partner. Like, and, you know, for me personally, yeah, I had a very different journey. You know, I've, through this, the pandemic hit about a year and some change after my big loss, my last loss. And my marriage was really starting to unravel when, you know, things started shutting down. And so, you know, I felt like I was still kind of coming off of that loss and in process of writing these stories and really just sitting deep in these emotions while the marriage is coming apart, I would say largely independent of the experience of miscarriage, but just to be sitting in the, you know, the grief of the world around us shutting down, the marriage falling apart, still, you know, sitting with pregnancy loss. It was like, what else is coming? And I think so many women have this experience. It's not just this isolated experience of loss. So, yeah. You know, a lot of relationships fall apart around loss, whether it's, you know, a living person's death or someone losing their job, right? Moving from one home to another. So many ways that we, you know, can lose our grip and lose our touch with one another.
So when you're sitting with these women, hearing their stories, and your marriage is unraveling, as you're saying, and the reality of that is pretty clear to you. I mean, some people would avoid the emotions and not want anything more to set them off. How did you show up and remain open to these stories as you're in the midst of so much uncertainty and so much grief?
Yeah, thanks. That's a great question. I think it just felt so important to share these stories. This was what I wanted when I was going through my loss. And, you know, I looked for resources out there and just there wasn't anything that really spoke to me. It was religious or it was too academic. And I didn't have any connection to the resources that were there online or in print. And I think this fiery feminist spirit in me was really sparked, and this entrepreneurial spirit in me. I have a handful of small businesses, and it was like, well, what the hell? This thing doesn't exist. I'm going to create it. Because I hope that what I would have wanted during this time would help somebody else too. And so I think that fire kept going and kept me connected to it, even as I was sitting in these really difficult emotions. I mean, I remember getting off of pretty much every interview that ended, I was crying. Mm-hmm. Just to receive these stories and to experience these other women going through their own catharsis in telling their stories to me. And such a beautiful, but really intense experience.
Had women always opened up to you like this?
You know, I have a background in social work and psychology. And so I think it is easy-ish for me just to kind of be with someone and meet them where they're at. Mm-hmm. I do coaching now, and that's a big part of my work, is just to kind of be able to connect and really drop into somebody. And so that for me felt pretty natural, just to kind of be with them and listen, you know, as I like to say in some of the facilitation work that I do, and I'm sure you do this as well, clearly, Chelsea, it's mm-hmm. just listening on this fourth level. It's like really from the heart and just receiving. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's not about me. I am just with this person mm-hmm. and fully, you know, bearing witness to their story. And it's powerful. It gives back to me as well.
Yes. Yes. Did you feel like you had to like amp up the self-care?
Oh my gosh. Yes.
Really? And what does that look like? What does self-care look like?
I mean, I'm a big bath person. So that was definitely in rotation heavily. Yeah. Moving my body. Also, I tend to, you know, when I have any sort of anxiety or just emotions that aren't really settling in well for me, just going on a long walk, having other people to talk to about it and just download, being able to process with people who are not involved in right. these stories or in that kind of grief was really helpful. So yeah, lots of baths. Some wine as well, you know.
Yes. Red or white?
I'm more of a white drinker, but yeah.
Are you? Have you always, you know, been someone that can connect with people's kind of harder truths? Like, where does that come from? Not everyone can sit, mm-hmm. as you say, and bear witness. You know, that's a certain quality. Truly, not everyone has that. Where does it come from?
Yeah, that's... Wow, that's a hard one. I love that question, though. I wonder, I mean, I've struggled with depression as a teenager. Yeah, I had a pretty severe bout of depression, you know, suicidal ideations. And I got really amazing care during that time that I'm so grateful for, and a family that really supported me. And so I wonder if that kind of feeds into that, just having been in those deep, dark recesses of the mind. And, you know, speaking with so many of these women who were sharing their stories, they struggle with postpartum depression, which so many people don't connect with pregnancy loss. They just imagine that's something that comes after a live birth. But those hormones are tanking after a miscarriage or a stillbirth, just like a live birth. And so... yeah, I think that was easier for me to kind of connect to that.
How long had you been having the suicidal thoughts before you said something to your family about it?
I think some months. I mean, definitely depressed for some months. Maybe, yeah, I would say probably like a month or so, really having those dark thoughts. Yeah, I mean, this is going back now. Yeah, 25 plus years. So it's been some time, but that experience, of course, you know, that's lodged in my brain and in my body.
What do you mean by in your body?
You know, I think these experiences of trauma and intense emotion, they stay with us, right? And I think there's a lot of good science that's coming out around this that, you know, trauma lives in the body, and we have to process it in our minds and in our spirit, as well as in the body. And we have these reactions often to traumatic stimuli based on our past traumatic experiences. And they're just visceral. It's almost like reflexive how we respond to stress and trauma based on how we have responded to it in the past. I think that's part of it.
Wow. Wow. Oh my God. I mean, can you remember when you were depressed at that age? Like, just, like, remember
this
the word email?
Back.
Do you remember the word email?
Yeah.
I haven't thought about when I heard it recently. I was like, oh my God, that was so me. It was so me. I remember I was living in this room in my family's like garage while we were redoing the house. Mm-hmm. And at some point my grandparents came and they stayed in the room, or they went to the room and they saw this writing that I had and the photographs on the walls. And they had this like intervention with my family about how depressed I was.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was really interesting because I think back then I used to think it was just, oh, I'm just creatively expressing myself. Mm-hmm. And then as I've gotten older and I was going through very, very dark nights of the soul recently, I was like, whoa, is this who I am? Has there always been an element of like depression in me? And what does that mean? You know, and
yeah. What does that mean? I'm curious when you say that. How does that live out now? Like, how do you experience that? And how do you connect back to that kind of emo time? I don't know if music was part of that too for you.
Yes, though I think that during this darkness, I stopped listening to music. You know, I think music, for example, was a way of like flowing through things, right? And there's been moments in my life during my darkest times when I knew music would help me and I shut it off completely. Wow. I knew things that would like to stay in motion would help me, but I couldn't do it. Recently it was like, oh, wait, it's the same voice, but it's so intensified in the amount that I'm hearing, the amount of questions that I'm cycling through. It just feels so enormous that maybe it's about tapping into it like I used to when I was a kid and was unashamed of it. And I didn't have this editor inside of me editing it. You know, maybe it's about when the voice comes again, like tapping into it and using it, doing something with it, because it does seem to go away. Like now I'm sitting on the other side of it, you know, a week and a half later, and I'm like, wait, what happened? Like that was so dark. Sometimes I don't think I do enough with it in a way, because I think it's I think it's me now. This is me all the time, and I'm so fearful of it. Right. But what would it look like if I started addressing and writing it out to remember how it sounds and what I'm looking to explore and all that?
I think it is like this big ball of energy. It's like this energetic potential. And what can you do with that? Well, writing it out, is there like a creative outlet that allows you to experience some sort of catharsis or healing in just expressing it and taking the energy and transforming it into something else that's positive? And not, and I'm not trying to just put a positive spin on it, right? I'm not like finding the silver lining, but how do we do that? How do we take like this restless or dark energy and shift it into something that has more of a positive creative potential? Like clearly you're such a creative soul. I'm curious, like, what does that look like?
Yeah, I mean, something interesting that happened is during this time, I started saying like no to these gigs that I do, just because they can really like wear down my spirit. I mean, being on sets, doing like brand ambassador work, when I'm good and I'm on, I can have a great time with it. But when things are really bad, it feels so toxic for me. So I started saying no to it, but I decided to still show up places. So I started going to this co-working space I use. But I wasn't feeling great. Like I was on the verge of tears the whole time I was there. But I started talking to people. If anyone asked me how I am, I cannot be someone that lies in this world. So I would be honest. Yeah. And I realized I started being honest around people that I felt like that are more successful than me. That's in my mind, they're more successful than me. And it's been very healing. I mean, there's men that wanted to talk to me during their work breaks, and we would have these long conversations, and they would completely acknowledge that I looked like I was on the verge of tears. With some people, I would cry in front of them. And I think for me, it was just like what helped me and what kind of felt creative in a way was vocalizing my truth in the midst of it, when there is no silver lining yet, when there is no wisdom from it yet. And it was seeing that people would continually say to me whenever I was somewhere, they're like, that I have such great energy. And even before they knew something was wrong. And it made me realize that even when I feel like things are falling apart and I'm in this place where I feel devastated by myself, that there's something that I've cultivated over these years of connecting to other people.
Yes.
That is a light in me. And that's not being taken. And that allows me to continue to create somehow, even in the midst of not knowing or being so uncertain about what I'm creating and all these things. So
I love that. So really just like trusting that if you're able to connect and just be honest about where you're at, like this light will kind of reflect back to you. I love that.
Yeah. Maybe it's why I put importance on it is that I remember in my past when I was going through like all this depression and I would just isolate. I would wait on myself to be better. I would wait on myself to see people when I was at the highest again. And what happened was because I was starving myself of connection, I got worse and worse.
Of course.
I was young when I first started doing that, so I didn't know what it was going to do to me. But waiting on myself to be better has been the worst thing that I've ever done.
Absolutely. It's amazing we continue to do that, right? When we get in these funks, it's like we forget all the wisdom we had previously. Like, oh, wait, I can just call that person. She loves me. She'll listen to me. It doesn't matter what the hell's going on, right? But there's this something, there's this break in us that's like, oh, no, I don't want to be a burden. I'm too ashamed. It's like the same problem I had last time I called her. Like, why didn't, you know, like, but that's what we're here for. Like, that's how we show up.
Can I tell you the story about a project I'm working on?
Please. Yeah.
So I decided to switch my dating profile to LA and to try to connect with guys out there that might want to come on the podcast and talk about heartbreak and all this stuff. So this guy, you know, in his 40s reaches out to me. I don't know why that matters, but I suppose it could. And he says he wants to jump on the phone and talk about it. He wants to, you know, he wants to hear about this project. So, and he wants it to happen now. So we talk on the phone and he tells me he's not actually interested in coming on the podcast. It would be nothing for his career, but he's interested in who I am. You know, he comes back to New York often, but then he ends up telling me that he's dating this girl. He's been dating this girl that he really likes, but he doesn't think it's going to work out with her because she's depressed. And she's not addressing it. And he goes, not only is she depressed, she's bipolar. I go, oh, wow. I go, well, what does that look like? What are you talking about? Like, what signs are you seeing? Because you're saying she's not addressing any of it. He says, well, last month, she was so amped and so happy in the relationship. And this month, she's just negative and she's doubting it. He's saying this is bipolar disorder. And he said, you know, last night I told her I am really interested in her. And she said, well, I feel like you're more interested in my friend. And so he was just speaking out loud and it was just shocking to me. And I bring it up because of that word depression. And I dated someone, had a similar reaction because I'm very like, very vocal about these things. And it was really wild to see this guy and then to remember the guy I was dating before that had these stories about women they had been dating that after the first month became depressed. And also like looking at depression as it felt like at the time, like, whoa, as if like that was something that they were going to have to manage with me.
Yeah, what? What is that about?
It was shocking. Like even in these dark moments I've been having and thinking like, oh, is this always going to come back? I still haven't thought about it as like, oh, this is so bad that someone else would have to deal with it with me.
Dealing with it with you? Like just that whole, I don't know, that like the phrasing of that makes me bristle because it's like, does that person not love you and care for you and want to walk with you and support your healing? Like, why is it like dealing with something? You know,
they
like
can't be bothered. You know what it is? Sometimes it's like, and it's like these ambitious men that to have any form of an emotional need is distracting for them at this time.
Right.
And,
wow.
And I'm like the biggest male champion. So I have a hard time even putting this out there because it sounds critical, but I'm thinking that's a little bit of what it's about.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I mean, people get in their own headspace and it's like the world revolves around them and their needs. And if you're not fulfilling their needs or if you're getting your own needs or getting in the way of fulfilling theirs or their desires, it's like, oh, there's no space for that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'll hit you back up in 4 months and see if your depression has lifted, right?
Right, yeah. Like, oh, I'm sorry, I'm an inconvenience to you and your
But then
agenda.
I can imagine where women, I'm like kind of seeing it now. It's like where women would end up silencing themselves and wanting on their own to be figuring it out.
Yeah.
Which is so disempowering.
Yes.
In a relationship dynamic. Yeah.
Absolutely. And we don't, why do we have to be fully healed to be in relationship with someone? None of us have arrived fully. Like, we're all working stuff out. Like, can we not bring that honestly to the relationship and just, own it? And that's okay.
I love that you say this, because that too was a question I got in the midst of my dark nights. A girlfriend of mine and her girlfriend were visiting me, and I was telling them about what's been going on, and the girlfriend said something like, well, do you even think that you're in a place to be dating? And I was like, no, I mean, sure, maybe not. And I said, but I want to stop this in my life where I keep on saying that I need to wait. I'm not ready yet. I'm not acceptable enough. I realize what this has been. I've done this my whole life. Like, I have to make a certain amount of money before I could be with a man that might take me seriously. Or I have to have different routines throughout my day in order to let someone really into my world. Have you ever struggled with this?
Oh, definitely. And I mean, as a coach, many of my clients struggle with this too. And certainly it's, something I think we've all experienced firsthand to some extent, these critical, inner voices that are like, oh, not good enough. You have, no, you're not there yet. That's not quite right. And it's like, well, you know what? Nobody's the finished masterpiece. So let's just be real and give ourselves, the gift of connection and the possibility of love and more connection. And why do we have to strive to be this possibly unattainable thing? Right? Like, we're all in practice or in process, and that's maybe a lifelong journey for some of us, whatever that thing is that we're working on. That's okay. That's got to be okay to bring to a relationship. Right? And just, connecting this back to even these stories of pregnancy loss, it's like, fertility and infertility issues, like that's you haven't like fixed it, that's a process. It's figuring out, okay, like, are we going again? Like, are we ready to try? Like, how is it feeling? Are we taking the next step on this crazy escalator? Like, wow, it's like we are in practice and in process.
But what's wild about this is that it really, I think, it calls for like these radical conversations. And I think that so much gets swept under the rug and you kind of just like let life happen and you deal with it then. It's like to even have these conversations with a partner, like, are we ready again? Like, what could it feel like if this were to happen again? Could we handle that? Did you feel like you had to like muster up this courage to have the conversations? Was it easy for you to?
I don't think there was anything easy about that, at least with my partner, because it felt like we were constantly checking in. When I'd been on going to a fertility clinic for some 4 or 5 months, and just really had this experience of feeling like I was a lab experiment and not like a woman with a full body and mind and spirit. And I needed to stop and possibly stop indefinitely trying. It felt like, I was just banging my head against a brick wall and maybe this wasn't meant for me. And, having that conversation with my partner, I remember being so terrified. Like, is this okay? And of course it was okay. And for some people, maybe it wouldn't have been okay. My partner was totally empathetic and, he got it. He could see me exhausted in the process and just, going through this cycle of hope and disappointment and the physical side effects were so intense. So, once we were okay with that decision to stop, doing the fertility meds and trying to conceive, it was checking in. It was like once a month, check, are you sure? Are you sure it's okay if we're not trying to have a kid? Because if we're committed to being together, it's like, this is the one opportunity, right? This is the next however many years until it's not possible. And so it felt like it was like this big weight every time, like having that conversation, like, are we sure I'm not disappointing you?
It's like, are you being honest with me?
Right.
And I can't imagine like how sex feels during this time.
Ugh. Yeah.
Really?
I mean, just that it's like happening on a schedule, at least like, you know, while you're trying to get pregnant, doing the fertility clinic visits and, you know, the self-injections and all that. It's like, you know, my body was bloated. I was exhausted. And then it's like, oh, you know, go time, because you're loaded up on all these meds and you finally have big juicy follicles. And then it's like, oh my God, the last thing I want to do is get naked.
Like, right.
But, you know, there you are. And that's the moment. You have, you know, whatever it is, 48 hours. It's like, it's so crazy. And, you know, so many women have gone much farther along in this journey of trying to get pregnant and to no avail. And like, I feel for them so deeply.
I know. I wonder if anyone ends up feeling, well, I'm sure they do, but I'm sure someone out there has felt this, is like revisiting sex after so much, like all this pressure around it. You know what I'm saying? Like how to feel free again, having sex, how to like not think of it as like, oh, it's a disappointment because nothing quote unquote came out of it. You know?
Right. Or it's like something we have to do because this is, you know, this is our goal ultimately. So got to make the sacrifice. Like that's such a terrible way to think about this, you know, what's supposed to be this beautiful, intimate love act, right?
And then how did you, or maybe some of the women in your book, deal with the body changes? Because I've been someone that has like struggled with body image my whole life.
So many women and men. Yeah.
And just, I mean, it's tough. It's like I told you, I really want children, but it's also like that great unknown. Like, I hope I'm someone that will be able to accept the changes.
Yeah. I think, you know, that's such a great question. And I think it really depends on the person, right? I'm just kind of remembering, it's so fresh to me still, just this romanticization of pregnancy and the pregnant body. I'm someone who's like fairly small chested. And so, you know, imagining that like my breast could become voluptuous and my body curvaceous and, you know, my skin would be glowing and like all these things I've wanted in life that, and of course, you know, the experience of pregnancy is right. It's emesis. It's, you know, the nausea and the swollen feet and all the things and it hurts. And then, you know, to experience loss with those symptoms, oh my gosh. But yeah, that was like a harsh slap in the face for me to realize like, oh, I've been like romanticizing this thing that can be not only, you know, uncomfortable with lots of terrible side effects, but can be life-threatening for, you know, the fetus as well as for the mother carrying.
Right.
But yeah, I think a lot of women, of course, who, you know, whether it's a live birth or a pregnancy loss, they're struggling to feel like they're in their bodies again, right? Like connected and rooted in their bodies and accepting of their bodies. And kind of this double whammy of feeling ashamed about it with the pregnancy loss and then still, you know, having maybe this extra weight and for what, right?
Right. 100% for what?
Yeah.
I remember in one of the stories, one of the women, she was talking about on Christmas, you know, she brought up the pregnancy loss and the husband was like something along the lines of like, don't do this. You know, stop making it about you. Act like it's a normal holiday.
Right. So awful, right? Can you imagine like, oh, just bury this as if it didn't happen. And it's like, wow, this happened. This is real. Yeah. Why isn't it okay to talk about it? And I think, you know, another woman who I interviewed, you know, and this is in the book, it's like her, she said, you know, silence begets silence. when we do that, it's like it's not okay for somebody else to talk about it. And so we're just perpetuating this mm-hmm. culture of silence and taboo and shaming women's bodies. And, you know, we're doing such a disservice.
Right. I mean, a main topic in the book, I felt like, was how people just overall, even in like the healthcare profession, all that, could be so much more sensitive mm-hmm. in the way that they spoke. You know, that right. like how often we forgot that this was like another human being, and what they needed was some support, like a second, a bit of sensitivity in these moments mm-hmm. of being delivered this news.
Right. Just to acknowledge like this was a whole dream, you know, like that we are human in our loss, and just to, yeah, I'm sorry, or I know this sucks. Some sort of acknowledgement, not just, you know, okay, here you go. No longer pregnant. See you later. Making room for the next person here in the waiting room. Yeah. There's a lot to be desired in bedside manner, I would say. And certainly that came across in so many of these stories and so many of the women whose stories didn't make this book.
Yeah. Oh my God. So many women's stories who didn't make this book. Like, you mean that you spoke to a lot of other people that didn't make
yes,
the book?
Yes. Yes. So many. I feel like I've spoken to hundreds of women now who wanted to share their story, you know, complete strangers, I feel like, yeah. come out of the woodwork. To share their stories, and it's beautiful to receive, and again, to bear witness to them. How do we make it more of a conversation? How do we normalize this dialogue around loss in general? Because it's not just pregnancy loss. It's, you know, our society's terrible at dealing with death, and talking about death and grief, and even understanding what the grieving process looks like and how to support people in that. So yeah, we have a long ways to go.
So what's next? So you write the book, that's one way. Have you been dreaming up other ways to continue to help normalize it?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, these conversations that we're having right now, I would so love to get a group of mm-hmm. healthcare providers, public health professionals, and some of these women who've experienced pregnancy loss together in a room and kind of workshop a better way of bringing awareness to this topic so that women don't feel so alone. So we can understand as a society how common it is. I mean, 1 in 4 is the statistic most often cited for pregnancy loss. And really, you know, with the unreported losses, it's more like 1 in 3 pregnancies end in loss. You know, if we knew that, if like there were some sort of like public health campaign or like raising awareness about that, I think everybody would be better served.
I feel like the reason that people don't is that they don't want our society fearful. Fearful that this can happen. Fearful that, you know, it's like keep us naive or something.
Oh, God. And then how does that help anybody, right?
Right.
So when it does happen, we're completely unprepared. You know, we feel like it's not okay to talk about because, oh, I must be the exception. I must have done this to myself, that guilt, that shame.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. The one story about the woman that was doing yoga and she felt the baby turn and then thought to herself, like, did the yoga cause this? Or another woman that was like skipping up the stairs or something and someone warned her, like, don't do that, you're pregnant. And then she found out that she lost the baby and thought it might be from skipping up the stairs. You know, just like the amount of blame.
Yes. You know? And we perpetuate that by not having the facts, by not knowing. Oh, you know, actually that doesn't cause loss. You know, there are all these things that we can do that are totally healthy during our pregnancies. And there's a lot of reasons, you know, we're not totally clear on why loss happens. Like we're starting to get more science around that, but you know, it's just, hey, that's also nature, right? Like there are certainly conditions that people have and genetics are starting to elucidate some of those more and testing has gotten better. Like, and, you know, it's like kind of surrendering to the mystery of our bodies and nature and like, okay, that pregnancy, that wasn't a good match. Like, let's get rid of it. Yeah. I think there are a lot of ways that we can support you know, women and couples through this better. And it just, you know, we have to decide this, what we want to do.
What about embracing, you know, the very real possibility, or, you know, for some, the fact that, okay, I'm not going to be a mom.
Yeah, that's a heavy one, Chelsea. I feel like so many of the women I spoke with who didn't yet have children and were still very much wanting to have them, or at least one, biologically, mm-hmm. you know, it's just such, it feels hopeless, I think, for a lot of them. Or being stuck in that cycle of hope and then disappointment and the shame and the depression and trying to muster up the courage and the energy to go back into that cycle. It's like this wild roller coaster ride. For me, I'm really grateful that I could find peace, like real peace around being child free. I'm 42 now. And truly feel good with it. And I know so many women don't, and my heart really goes out to them.
How did you find peace?
You know, I think for a long time, I didn't want to have children. Mm-hmm. And when I hit my early 30s, it's like, you know, baby fever just like pounded me over the head. And it was like so intense. And I just wasn't with the right partner. And, you know, it felt like the timing was never right. And then all of a sudden I'm, you know, advanced maternal age. I'm 35, older. And that's when I met my now ex and saw in him finally, oh, okay, the timing's maybe right. And now I see this potential father and partner in this person. So let's do it. And it was like, all in, let's go for it. And then that experience of it not happening quickly, like, oh, we'll just go to the fertility clinic and take these meds. And of course that'll work because that happens. And, you know, for so many people it doesn't, and that wasn't my experience. And so this exhaustion following that, I think, was really sobering for me. And over the next, you know, two and a half years before I surprise got pregnant, I was really letting go of that deep, deep desire to have children. And by the time, you know, I did get pregnant, I was totally in disbelief that I was pregnant because I didn't think my body could do it. You know, like we'd already gone down that road, seemed impossible. By the time that happened, it was like, oh, okay, well, everything is, you know, all the dust just got kicked back up again. Like maybe I do want it. Da, da, da. And so it was a wild whirlwind of emotions. And I think really through this project and speaking with other women and really connecting to other women's like strong desires to mother and women who are already mothering allowed me to kind of realize my own truth that I'm good. I don't need it. Like my family feels complete. And it takes time to settle, I think, a lot of these things. And for many women, again, this is like not okay. It's not okay that they don't have their own kids yet. And that's real. And for me, and I think, you know, there's like, I've read it's about 10% of women now are choosing to live a child-free life. That's something we're also not talking about because we're such a, you know, pro-childbirth, pro-natalist society. But yeah, I think like it's important to talk about that too, right?
Right. Because, you know, with some, of course, it is a choice not to have children. And then yet for others, it's not really a choice. It's not a choice. Yeah. How did the pandemic kind of support you at all during this time?
That's a great question. Well, I mean, it certainly added many challenges. But I guess it allowed me to have more of like the quiet, I guess. You know, things were shutting down and I knew I really wanted to finish writing this book. And, you know, like I said, with my marriage really falling apart during that time, I think it was like a lifeline in some ways to be able to go into this and like get out of myself, get out of my head and focus on these women. And even though, you know, my story kind of is woven throughout these stories in the book, it really was this cathartic process. And I'm so grateful to these women and to this project for giving me that gift of healing. And for the pandemic to, you know, just quiet everything down. So, okay, yeah, I'm on the computer. I'm just writing. There's no concerts to go to. I'm not going out to dinner. Yeah, it's okay.
No guilt.
Right.
Are you single now?
I've been seeing someone for the last year, which has been interesting to be back in that vulnerable space of partnership. Yeah.
What do you mean? What do you mean the vulnerable space?
Yeah. I mean, just for me, it's really like, I want to be honest and drop into space of real intimacy with whomever I'm, you know, choosing to spend that kind of time with. And that means for me really being able to drop my guard and just be me. Like I use this phrase, full spectrum Frida sometimes. Like I want to experience the full range of emotions and express myself fully with someone who's going to be sharing that kind of intimate space with me. And so that for me requires a lot of vulnerability and courage just to kind of be me completely. And, you know, vulnerability also in terms of, you know, this is my second divorce. So there was a lot of judgment for me and even going through that process, like what's wrong with me that I can't choose the right partner. I can't hold on to a marriage and, you know, a lot of really unfair blame and judgment that I've had to work through, which has definitely been a process. So I'm really just trying to be mindful of still wanting to be vulnerable in this new relationship. And also not merging immediately, like not having to take it to the next level. Like we don't have to move it together. We don't have to, you know, start going down that route. It can just be what it is right now and being okay with that. I think like so often we're in relationships and we're just on this escalator. And so I'm trying to just not take that ride, like do it differently this time and really stay true to, what's present.
Right. Like rather than always being trying to advance it.
Yes. Yeah. Like, no, we don't have to get married. We don't have to buy a house. We don't have to, yeah. Like kids aren't going to be part of it. Like it's okay. Like we can chart our own path at our own pace. It doesn't have to be, you know, 1,000 miles an hour. Like I think it has been for me in the past.
I wonder how this, having this book helps in that process, because someone like sees that you've spent all these hours opening yourself to these stories and that this has been something that's been real for you too.
Yeah.
Did it change anything dating when this book was out there?
I mean, it's certainly part of my story. And, you know, when you're dating, you're starting to see somebody, it's like, oh, well, what do you do? And I wear many different hats. And so that's always a complicated answer for me. But, you know, saying that, well, I've written this book and it's, you know, it's coming out this spring, like that's part of it. And so, yeah, I think like, had I not written this book and invested that time, I don't think, you know, that would have come out so soon in the relationship.
Oh, like even you having a miscarriage?
Yeah. Cause I, you know, really? Of course that's part of who I am and my, you know, informs, yeah, how I show up to people and projects and all of that now. But I'm not sure that I would have revealed that so early on in relationships. Really? But because how it's long? Like, oh, what do you do? That's like, oh, well, I'm also a writer, I guess.
And I know something about this subject, by the way.
Right.
You know, it's not just being a writer. Like, this is also me.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, oh, well, that's an interesting topic. Yep. Well.
And also because let's be real, I mean, it impacts or it can your relationship, you know, I would
totally
feel like, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think definitely dating, I think like even in mid late 30s, it's like, are kids on the table is a very early question.
Is
right?
It? Right. I mean, I don't know. I feel like, you know,
at 34, is that part of your conversation?
You know what? I need to be more vulnerable. No, it needs to be. It's awful. It's like, I think I started to realize somehow I fell into this space of, because I was never a dater. I would meet someone, they would find me through my work, and they'd instantly become my significant other. So this dating space of like, wait a second, am I supposed to be taking my feelings seriously? You know, is it going to scare someone away if I start talking about the real desires I have for my life? And I realize, you know, it's disempowering, at least for me, to stuff any of it down. So totally. It is something that but it's weird. I don't know if you ever felt this, where it's like, oh my God, are people just assuming because I'm 34 that I'm in a rush? Or like, do they take every emotion that I have? Oh, it's because she's 34 and doesn't have this thing yet. That bothers me. That really bothers me.
Yeah, that I can relate to that strongly. And I think, you know, a lot of people do bring that into a conversation. People who are not close to us, like, oh, well, when are you having kids? And it's like, why is there the assumption that kids are happening?
Right.
But I think, like, you know, people do this all the time. And I think part of the issue, especially for people struggling with infertility, is like, can we stop asking that question?
Right. Like, let me offer that up first. Right.
Right.
Like,
right.
But
with dating, it's like, are you going to fall in love with someone who definitely doesn't want to have kids when you know that that's something that you are called to do? Like, don't you want to know that early on?
Oh yeah. I mean, sometimes I think it helps use these dating apps, like say want kids or don't, but sometimes people don't answer it. But yeah, I mean, I've been up against where I've been dating men now that have children. And that was something that I never thought I would do. And that has really changed things for me. And has also made me desire, you know, I can see myself now more as a parental figure, but it's also been interesting dating someone with kids because you see how they are like, not just as a boyfriend, but a father. You get that.
Which is so revealing. Yes. So revealing.
And I got to tell you, the two guys that I dated that had children, they were very, very different fathers, different fathers. So it doesn't all look the same across the board. Yeah. Never done. Yeah. So I coined the word break upward, and I'm curious what it might mean to you.
Break upward. Ooh, okay. Interesting. So that sounds like breaking up with somebody and really like growing strong from that experience, like taking, you know, whatever didn't work there or whatever tensions existed that caused that break and looking at it, like not being scared to look at oneself and like, what part did I play in that? And what can I learn from this? How can I grow from this break in this relationship? That's what I hear in that is like, how can I grow from this experience, from this moving apart from one another? How did you mean it? I'm so curious.
I mean it in so many ways. One thing is integrating. You know, I think I was always someone that like, just because like a split happens, I don't just leave it in the past. And so it's like, how can, like you're saying, growing through this, growing in thanks to this. And also like, you know, sometimes like just like the power of emotions is so strong that it completely can take us out. But then just like perspective. I think once we finally have perspective over something and acceptance, we're really able to launch ourselves to a higher place. So for me, like breaking upward is also about taking ourselves to the next level of our life across the entire board, like emotionally, mentally, you know, spiritually, professionally. Just it's a whole new playing field. I remember when I first thought of the word years ago, I was like, I don't want dating for myself just after a breakup to be that I reach for the next person again. I really want to get myself to a new playing field within myself where I'm reaching to different opportunities.
Yes. And oh, that's so strong. Yeah. That's super inspiring. I love that. That's a great phrase to coin.
Thank you. Well, tell my audience where they can find you.
Okay. Yes. Well, the book is coming out, Carry Me, Stories of Pregnancy Loss, June 7th, and it's available wherever you can buy books, on pre-order as well. I am on Instagram at Frida Hoffman Writes, or my website, fridahoffman.com. And yeah, more info on book launch details coming.
Are you going to be doing an audiobook?
Oh, that would be fun. I'm not decided
yet. You have such a good voice. Are you going to have a podcast? Oh my God. I mean, people say things about my voice. I feel like people must say things about your voice. Do they?
Sometimes. I shouldn't say this in a recorded interview, but I have had, there's a few friends that say that I should be on some sort of like sex talk line.
Yes, yes. That's what I get. I'm told the same thing. Actually, a friend showed me, I should send it to you. There's some website where you can audition to do like erotic literature. I feel like
oh my gosh, that's
too.
So fun.
Yes. Right? Oh my God. I feel
so
like
fun.
I found my kindred spirit. Oh my God, let's take over. We could do lost stories in a sultry, intimate tone, right?
Let's do it, Chelsea.
Okay. Well, you are absolutely beautiful, and you have such a bright light to you as well. And, you know, I'm happy that I got to read this and, you know, sit with it and confront it for myself and see a whole new avenue of women that – you know, I can be connecting with, even if I'm not in that place myself. And also, I think just it makes me think about, you know, looking into other people's eyes and never knowing what they're going through.
Think
about all the internal struggle that someone like sitting with or having to get back out and go to work in the midst of all it. That was so crazy, running through these stories, going to work, having clients. Right. It was just insane. And just the ability to pick yourself back up and put yourself out there is so impressive to me. Thank you for putting this on my radar.
Well, thank you so much for engaging with it and bringing me on to talk about it and share these stories. Thanks so much, Chelsea.
If this episode resonated with you, it would mean the absolute world if you could pass it on and let other people know about it. How you can support this podcast is really just sharing it, telling people about it. If you know someone that's hurting in their heart, tell them about Thank You Heartbreak. And if you want to be a guest on Thank You Heartbreak, reach out to me. You can find me on Instagram at Thank You Heartbreak, or you can email me directly at Chelsea, C-H-E-L-S-E-A, at BreakUpward, BreakUpward.com. And if you're interested in one-on-one coaching sessions, you can visit my website, breakupward.com/shop, where you can check out directly from my site. It's a super, 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 super simple process. Of course, I will answer any of your questions before you book. And again, you can email me at chelsea@breakupward.com. There's many different coaching options. And I would love to show up for you as you begin to show up in more wise and clarifying and secure ways for yourself. Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll be right back.